From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of March 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, where he serves as the senior grains analyst. A bit later in the program, the folks right here at the Andersons in Champaign County will join us to take a look at the cash grain market. We'll talk with the guys at Earth Risk Technologies up in Chicago about the weather forecast as we close out our time together. Today, I'll tell you a bit about cash-rented farms and how they're expected to lose about $40 an acre on average in the state of Illinois. We'll discuss that with Gary Schnitt, Farm Management Specialist, as we make our way through this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago at the CME Group for a Monday afternoon, finished like this. Nearby contract for the soft red winter wheat, March at 626 3/4, up 27 3/4, July at 635 3/4, 27.5 cents higher. The hard red March at 695 3/4, up 25 cents, and July at 694 3/4, up 24 1/4. Now that would have been the hard red spring, and the July was the soft red. March corn futures now 464, up 6.5 cents. The May at 570 1/2, up 7 for the day. July corn at 474 3/4, up 7 1/4, and September up 6 cents at $4.74. December corn at 476 1/2, up a nickel. March futures at $4.84, 3 3/4 higher. March corn futures, or rather soybean futures, at $14.07 1/4, down 7 for the day. May at $14.09 1/4, down 4 3/4, and July off 3 3/4 at $13.81 1/2. November beans $11.71 1/2, up 2 1/4. January futures of next year $11.75 1/4, up 3 cents. Bean meal at $4.61.30, down $6.60. Bean oil at $42.11, that's 59 cents higher as we finished a Monday afternoon. Live cattle futures at the CME Group finished the April at $144.12 1/2, down 85 cents. June at $134.90, up 70. March feeder cattle $171.77 1/2, up 7 1/2 cents. And the lean hogs finished the April at $108.67 1/2, at $1.82 1/2 per 100 pounds, more than they finished on Friday afternoon. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. If you have a ticket for tomorrow, I'll be looking forward to seeing you at the All Day Ag Outlook over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. By the way, the doors open at 7:45 a.m. Central Time. Here's what the outside markets are looking like at this hour. Crude oil futures, $104.73 a barrel, $2.14 higher. The RBOB gasoline, or wholesale price, at $3.06, up 3 9/10. Ethanol futures at $2.26 1/2, down 2 7/10. And natural gas today at $4.48 1/2, down 12 4/10 of a cent. Diesel fuel $3.07 3/10, 5 7/10 higher. And gold futures at $1,350 finished up $28.70. The U.S. dollar at 80.08 is up 0.39. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Mostly sunny skies, a high of 16 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy and a low of 5. On Tuesday, cloudy and a low around 15 degrees. In the evening, that is, Tuesday during the day. For our all-day outlook, partly sunny skies and a high near 26 degrees. Wednesday, mostly cloudy and a high of 31. Thursday, sunny and 33. Thursday evening, a low of 21. And Friday, mostly sunny skies and 43. Saturday, a chance of rain, some snow, mostly cloudy and 39. And by the time we get to Sunday, a chance of rain and snow continues, mostly sunny. Otherwise, a high near 40 degrees. A more complete look of the weather forecast comes up at the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with the guys at Earth Risk Technologies. They're in Chicago, Illinois. That happens right here on Illinois Public Media.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, it is a Monday afternoon. Let's check now the marketplace with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, for this third day of March. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
There's a wild ride in Chicago as the Crimea continues to be a trouble spot for the world.
Yeah, it's kind of front and center here when you start involving multinations and an international event like this. It definitely gets the world's attention in a hurry. Thankfully, I guess no shots have been fired yet, but there's been some pretty good power moves taking place, and there's been some comments made by both sides. It's pretty powerful statements that hopefully won't escalate any further, because it could really disrupt world trade in general. And we saw the world traders take action slightly there Friday, take even more action there overnight, by seeing quite a bit of movement in the whole commodity sector here as traders get positioned and try to hedge or protect their stand in the marketplace there, Todd.
Can you take a look at the energies for me for just a second? Crude oil, natural gas in particular. These would be two of the commodities, along with wheat, of course, and corn, that come out of the Ukraine. And then the energy commodities out of Russia. These come across the Crimea as they make their way into Western Europe, Western and Eastern parts of Europe. Crude oil at $104.71 a barrel only gained a couple of bucks. That doesn't seem like too much. Natural gas actually is off for the afternoon. I suppose that's on supplies in the United States.
Yeah, when you look at the big picture here, I don't know if natural gas is going to be much of a play there, just due to our structure here in the U.S., but the crude oil will be front and center, along with heating oil and even gasoline, per se. But you're correct. The main thing and the main source of revenue they have is the energy sector, so the energy market will be watched very closely here. And when you look at the overall pipelines and so forth, and the transportation, there's a lot of interconnection in through there, so energies will be one of the ones hit first in through here, and that would set the stage here. As long as this world energy market remains robust and demand remains strong, they're going to have to focus somewhere else, and this energy sector could be set up here, especially crude oil, to rally a quick 20, 30 bucks if something would happen to be unleashed in that area.
A disruption in the marketplace is always the fear, and it's the speculation that the trade uses to move things either lower or higher. They've seen disruption in the wheat market in particular, as a potential problem, and they reacted pretty effectively to that in Chicago, pushing wheat futures, up on nearly 30 cents.
Yeah, the thing to watch, energies, if Russia does take a more aggressive stance, that could be a source of their revenue gone. But two, they are a decent exporter of wheat, as you mentioned there. The Ukraine, about 10 million metric tons, Russia, about 16 million metric tons. They are somewhat of a net exporter in the world market. But when you look at where they are with shipments and so forth, they're pretty well shipped out. For the most part, in Ukraine, Russia still has some wheat to ship out. They've pretty well been fairly aggressive from last fall into the early winter there. So it's sort of kind of the future demand in through here. And wheat was front and center. Egypt has enough inventory till about the 1st of June, but they're going to have to quickly shop around the world to start gathering supplies from June 1st on. Wheat will be the most sensitive. Second was corn. But the situation with corn is the GMO issue, so I don't know if they would really come, Europe especially, would come to the U.S. to pick up some of our GMO corn or not. So they'll probably search for some non-GMO corn somewhere. But wheat, corn, then the least effective would be the bean and the bean complex.
And it might be important to remind ourselves of some historical facts at this point, that it was the Russian embargo on wheat exports because of a drought there that pushed Egyptians to go to the streets because they were lacking bread and started the process in the Middle East. So this can escalate quickly into other regions around the world as people are cut off from food supplies and feedstuffs, and it's something really important to watch.
Well, it's something to watch. The main thing is, when you look at the world supply-demand balance sheet, we still have plenty of inventory to go around at this point in time. So it's going to put a lot more emphasis on weather, especially here in the U.S., because, you know, this last cold spell and so forth is not good for say, because later we go into winter here, earlier in the spring we see these cold spells that could hurt production. So the Russian conflict, along with low weather, and this concern is probably going to keep wheat markets fairly firm here until things settle down.
Well, let me talk about that. So how much of the recent rise in the wheat market do you suppose is based off in the soft red, that is, based off conditions on the ground in the United States, and how much is based off of what's happening on the world front?
Well, that's a good question. I'd say today's market action, market closing where it did from Friday there, the July wheat futures were up 27 cents. I would say 26 cents, the world of it, and the other 1.5 cents is the weather here in the U.S.
So does that mean this is it? Because it's more of a speculative trade that, and who knows how long the problems would last in the Crimea, but it could go away quickly if people are thinking there is an actual real gain in the wheat market.
Yeah, correct. That's the thing is that, you know, the trade was heavily long beans, short wheat, heavily long beans, short corn, and we saw some unwinding of that. And, you know, wheat came to front and center through here. I think July wheat futures around the 650 area is a real critical area to start to watch. The thing on the soft red winter wheat, acreage was down somewhat to start with. And so the spring weather is going to make it a little bit more important as we move above that 6.5 area. That will be more critical.
Did corn come under pressure at all during the day? I know it finished higher, but did it come under pressure at all from commercial selling based off of purchases, new purchases that they might have been making in the cash grain marketplace?
Yeah, we basically saw the highs in the corn market about 5:30 this morning. And so as guys got up and saw the extreme up move, they realized that some open orders got filled and producers took advantage of this higher market to add to cash corn sales. Basis broke. Then as the day wore on here, the overall futures just kind of ground lower here throughout the trade. So it's a welcome opportunity. When you look at the corn chart, the old crop, new crop met some head and shoulders upside objectives. Met some retracement levels to look at there as profit potential. So we'll see how the market goes in the overnight trade here to see if we can at least hold the gains we accomplished today.
Speaking of holding gains, the hog market up another $1.82.5 today. What's happening there? They have just been rally central.
Well, that's the next shoe to fall if we do see some further tension with Russia, I feel. We saw the hog complex, you know, scream to the upside here in confirmation. We're seeing more the virus spread. There's idea that right now we're seeing about 2% more hog production, but as we get in the spring, we could see as much as 4 to 5% drop in hog production. And so there's some scrambling here to get some coverage in place. Also, too, just last week we saw that Russia inquired about feed additives and opening up some pork trade to Russia there. So if anything else other than wheat being affected by this Russian conflict, the meat sector would be the next thing to fall if we see further conflict, especially poultry side. We've been shipping a lot of thighs and legs to Russia. They were looking at picking up some more meat over time, so that could be quite interesting to watch as we go through the week.
And finally, have you given much thought to what kind of things you'll be telling the folks over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana tomorrow?
Well, I've always got thoughts. But, you know, until this Russian conflict, we were kind of in their opinion that we could be subject to some downside price risk over the next 2 years. Would you look longer term, once we get past 2015, 2016, we feel that's when the great pork robbery of 2013 would kick in gear, and we could see quite a bit higher agricultural prices as we move past that point due to overall worldwide feed demand increasing significantly, Todd.
All right. We'll look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Very good.
That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. We'll be one of more than a dozen analysts that join us at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana tomorrow. If you got a ticket, we'll see you there. If not, we don't have tickets left. But you can always come next year if you'd like. Doors open, by the way, at 7:45 a.m. Central Time.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business. So Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Oh, the moonlight's fair tonight, along the Wabash.
Agriculture has lost an important voice. Jack Crowner, 81, of Louisville, passed away last Thursday. Jack was a veteran of over 60 years in farm broadcasting, and he owned and operated the Farm Service Radio Network, serving radio stations in Kentucky and Indiana and nearby states. Jack served as farm director for WAVE radio and TV stations in Louisville, WMT stations in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and television stations in Evansville, Indiana, and Lexington, Kentucky for over 30 years. Jack was raised on a dairy and hog farm in DeWitt, Michigan. He graduated from Michigan State University in 1955 with a degree in broadcasting. After college, he received a U.S. Air Force commission and served on active duty in the Alaskan Territory. Jack retired as a lieutenant colonel after 26 years in the Air Force Reserve and served as the president of the National Guard in Kentucky. In 1970, Jack Crowner served as the president of the National Association of Farm Broadcasters, the NAFB, and in 1990 was named National Farm Broadcaster of the Year. In 2004, Jack was inducted into the NAFB Hall of Fame in Kansas City. You may recognize his voice even if you lived outside Crowner's considerable on-air territory. Jack served as announcer for the National Farm Machinery Show, the Kentucky State Fair, and the North American International Livestock Exposition. He also served as the public director of Farm Credit Services of Mid-America, including the states of Ohio, Indiana, Kentucky, and Tennessee. Jack Crowner was a calm and dedicated voice of agriculture. He's one of my personal mentors, though I doubt he knew that was the case. There are just some people you want to emulate. For me, as a farm broadcaster, Jack Crowner was that man. He'll be laid to rest Thursday. I will miss him thereafter.
On the banks of the Wabash, far away.
Up next, the commodity price outlook has farmers and many others concerned. Something we'll eventually need to give if $4 a bushel corn is the new normal. I'll have more on why lowering cash rents may be the first step in the process. University of Illinois ag economists have been telling producers to control their costs for nearly 3 years in anticipation of lower commodity prices. It means working to get the best, lowest possible price on inputs like fertilizer, diesel fuel, and seed. It appears the high price of Prosperity Bill will come due this season. USDA expects the average cash price of corn around the nation for the 2014 crop will be under $4 per bushel. U of I's Gary Schnitke says Illinois' projection isn't quite that low, but even the higher number points to farmers losing money on their cash-rented properties.
If we're using our current projections of a $4 corn price, $11 soybean price, operator and land returns are below average cash rents for 2014, and they're below it by $40 an acre. So if our $4 corn price holds, near trend yields, we will have a $40 loss on each acre that's rented at the average cash rent for this year, and that's widespread across all productivity classes.
There's only one thing to do, maybe not for this year, but certainly for next year, says Schnitke.
It is time where we seriously begin looking at lowering cash rents.
Cash rent is the single largest per acre input cost on the farm. It is a cost that, on average, has increased by 8% per year since 2006. It's also a cost Schnitke believes must come down if there is to be any positive income return to the farmer.
If we're looking at $450 price, we think $40-$50 decline in cash rents is the area that we have to be looking at, and that will result in little to no return in a $4 price environment.
It'll be interesting to see if the landowners are willing to lower cash rents. It may be that the bank has as much to do with the process as anything. Farmers borrowing money to pay cash rents at the beginning of a crop year are likely to find an unwilling financial partner. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
It's Monday. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Amy Sage at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County is on the phone line to look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Amy.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Farmers looking at prices, seeing them go up and responding with a little movement of cash corn.
Absolutely. We've bought a ton of corn today, old and new, actually. So we're seeing farmers pull the trigger after this rally here.
So how much does it have to do with the price of corn in the rally, and how much does it have to do with weight limits going to be posted on the roads pretty soon?
Well, there's probably a lot of truth to that, Todd, to be honest with you, because we just haven't seen a lot of movement up until this point. We did buy some DP corn over the past month on this bounce that we've seen here, but really, after this rally today, we're looking at some new purchases. So I think you're right. A combination of both. People have been really hoping for an opportunity to get some sold, like you said, before roads get posted and get this moved out before they get planting. This rally provided them an opportunity to do so.
And we probably should explain that to some of our non-ag listeners, that in rural areas and other places, there are weight limits on the roads. And those weight limits change during the year. During the winter months, they can be higher, especially then in the spring. They get dropped more than anything else for a bit. And sometimes the semis are just too heavy to run on the road. Tractors and a pair of wagons, too, I suppose.
Yes.
So that's the way it happens. And that causes producers, when they're thinking that's going to change, and they're seeing some really good prices and better prices, that is, and they can get in and get their corn, that they just might go ahead and move it. What's your expectations over the next couple of weeks, then?
As far as movement goes?
Yep.
I guess we think we should see an influx of corn and beans over the next few weeks here. You know, guys are thinking right now with the current forecast that we have cooler and wetter that we might be slower going getting planted at this point. Nonetheless, we think that a lot that usually gets moved in January and February due to the polar vortex that we've had here, we haven't seen actually come to town. So we think it should be heavier over the next few weeks.
And do you suppose it will stay in the bin and you won't see it until July?
No.
It's going to come.
Yeah, we think so. What typically stays in the bin until July will likely stay. We do have a little bit of carry in the market there. So guys that typically hold stuff in the bin until June, July will probably do so, I would say, but no more than usual, I wouldn't think.
All right. I don't have time for your prices, but thanks so much, Amy.
Thank you.
Amy Sage is with the Andersons, joins us here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. You can find us online at willag.org.
It's National Chili Day. There are several theories on where chili began, among them that cowboys invented chili while driving cattle. Supposedly, cooks planted oregano, chilies, and onions among patches of mesquite to protect them from foraging cattle. The next time they passed the same trail, they'd collect the ingredients, add beef, and make a dish called trail-dried chili. Perhaps the earliest mention of the dish, although not by name, was by J.C. Clopper, who in 1828 noted how poor people cut meat they could afford into a kind of hash, with nearly as many pieces of pepper as there were pieces of meat. On this day in agricultural history in 1835, at the DuPont Corporation, Dr. Wallace Hume Carruthers invented nylon. A patent was issued in 1837, and nylon stockings soon followed. Nylon has also been used in products as varied as tires to blood plasma filters. Carruthers also invented neoprene, a synthetic rubber that's today often used in horse breast collars. And speaking of horses, in 1979, Mr. Ed the Talking Horse died. The pilot show, entitled The Wonderful World of Wilbur Pope, was produced by George Burns, but it was never broadcast. TV bosses, however, thought it could be a successful TV show with a few changes. The TV series Mr. Ed first became a syndicated show on January 5th of 1961. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It has been an interesting winter for weather, and the weekend, and I think maybe even the week ahead, remains that way. From Earth Risk Technologies, their senior weather analyst, Mark Russo, now joins us out of Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, good afternoon, Todd. Glad to be here.
Take me through the previous weekend, where the weather track was supposed to go and where it really went.
Well, we certainly saw overall, I guess you want to call minor precip totals, snow totals in areas of central Illinois. Kind of the heavier precip was further south towards the Ohio River Valley. But this swath of precip extended all the way from the southern plains. You know, this precip is needed in areas of Oklahoma, the Texas Panhandle, all the way eastward, and still snowing in areas of the Mid-Atlantic right now. And all this snow and kind of a wintry mix here is all on this, it's been on the leading edge of this Siberian air mass, which is intruded here in the central and eastern U.S. and is producing just unseasonably to even record cold temperatures right now.
No, is the Siberian, is that different than the polar vortex, or is it just deepening, going across the other side of the planet and pulling even more cold air over?
The two go hand in hand, Todd. You need the polar vortex to bring the Siberian air across the pole into North America. So we've seen the polar vortex revisit us, and the way that the jet stream pattern set up, especially the key being this blocking ridge of high pressure across Alaska, that's helped to force the cold air right across the North Pole from Siberia and direct the channel it right here into the U.S.
It is cool for this time of year, just 18 degrees outside of our studios at the time of our discussion on this Monday afternoon. What can we look forward to the rest of the week?
Well, we're going to see temperatures gradually moderate as we go through the week. In fact, that'll carry forward into next week as well. Certainly, we're going to have another cold morning here tomorrow morning, but from this point on, looks like the strongest Arctic air will be shifting east of us, and we're going to be getting into more of a variable pattern. Still on the cold side, base is normal for the next couple of weeks, but the anomalies are not going to be as strong as what you're seeing right now. So a bit more variability, still cold bias, but trending at least a little bit more seasonal as we approach the middle part of the month.
And your quick assessment of weather in South America?
Well, we continue to be very active in areas of Brazil, where they're harvesting soybeans. Also, that's still benefiting soybeans in southern Brazil. What we're watching right now is that there are indications starting after 10 days for eastern Mato Grosso, Goiás, and some of the adjacent states there to begin turning drier, which is needed to help improve some of the harvest issues and the overall wetness issues that have begun to arise over the past week or two with the active conditions. So as it appears right now, it looks like some improvement here starting the middle part of the month.
Mark, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo, of course, is with Earth Risk Technologies. He's out of Chicago, Illinois, joins us on this Monday afternoon to take a look at the weather forecast and helps us to wrap up the closing market report. Our thanks go to him. Always remember that you can visit us online at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org.